time value of money says, hey, I'd much rather have those dollars earning and working for me now, knowing that, hey, I'll have to pay the tax somewhere later down the road. I'd rather pay the tax with the tax per se, rather than just pay the tax.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further.
Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I'm your host, Yonah Weiss. I'm really excited to be here today because it's not every day that we get to talk with a CPA. Well, that rhymed. I'm a poet. I didn't know it. I didn't mean to, but I'm really excited to have Ryan Bakey today with us from MLS Consulting. He is an up-and-coming rock star in the accounting space. Got an awesome Facebook group, which we'll tag in comments below. I'd love to just about all about tax strategies for real estate investors. So love to have you on the show, Ryan. Tell us how you doing today, first of all.
Doing very well today. Been getting to the gym every day this week and going to take today and tomorrow, get some work done, and hopefully enjoy the Super Bowl on Sunday. It's going to be great. Oh, and then Valentine's Day.
So you're not the typical, you know, nerdy accountant type that everyone has a stereotype as.
No, I try to break that stereotype. To be honest with you, I had a 2.6 GPA in high school and I almost failed out of math my senior year. I had a D minus, and I don't know what it was that kind of had shifted my mindset, my perspective. But once I got to college, I started grinding and really focusing on the why, and I didn't want to let anybody down. So that's when I had this shift, and I had took a lot of computer classes, learned Microsoft Excel. And then once I started taking personal finance and accounting classes, I just put those two together and it was smooth sailing from there. So I have like an athletic leadership background combined with my accounting brain. And that's what you get out of me. It's this athletic, try to fix the stereotype or the mold.
There you go. We'll got to figure out a way maybe in the future to brand that, you know, brand that somehow.
Yeah, maybe. Somebody said I should brand myself as a bearded accountant, but I normally don't keep it this long. It's just...
Yeah, there's a lot of accountants with beards out there. Especially in New York.
That doesn't make me stand out.
Yeah, in New York, like every accountant has a beard, pretty much.
Good to know.
At least the ones I know. But it's great to have you here. I'm really excited. Put out a ton of content, especially on Instagram and like I said, in your Facebook group. And you're talking to that, you know, the Gen Z kind of crowd, right? You're talking to the people who are young like yourself, who are just getting started post-college, getting started in investing, getting started in their careers, and trying to find the right way, find the right path. Like, how did you figure out like, oh, this is something I should be doing? Or did it just come natural to you?
The real estate part of it didn't actually hit me until I was preparing tax returns in college for a CPA firm. And I had prepared a tax return for a married couple that made 200 grand. And I prepared a tax return for a single guy who made almost 400,000 in cash flow from real estate. He owned like 20 apartment buildings in Chicago. And the single guy who made 400 grand had paid less in taxes than the married couple who made 200 grand as a W-2. And I had asked my boss, who's also a CPA at the time, I said, how is this possible that, you know, so-and-so can make double the amount, but pay less in taxes? And his response was, it's because he invests in real estate. And ever since that moment, that I needed to figure out everything there is to know about this whole real estate tax thing. And I've kind of set my mind on figuring that out since. And it is true. If you invest in real estate, paying taxes can be optional sometimes if you have the right strategy in place.
That's amazing. And so you yourself have, since then, invested in your own real estate, correct?
Yep. Multifamily houses in the Southwest suburbs for now. But definitely looking at short-term rentals and other cash flowing businesses I invest in as well. So looking at like hair salons, laundromats, anything I can get my hands on that produces cash flow.
Awesome idea. And there are tax savings with all those as well, right? Any businesses will have their own tax.
Right. Depending on how you structure them, right? If I'm passive to that business, it becomes passive income to me. And therefore I can offset it with some of my other losses that I might have from syndications, real estate, et cetera.
That's such a great idea. I mean, yeah, it's like the light bulb moment, right? Hit off. I think there's so many people out there that still don't get it. right? They still don't get that you can invest in real estate and pay little to no taxes. And I think it's something you're spreading the information about a lot, educating people on a daily basis. And that's kind of how you've gone off on your own to create your own accounting firm, right?
You're right. It's nice that you're bringing that up, because if you look at any sort of rich, wealthy person's tax return, they don't have anything on line one for ordinary or W-2 wages, or they don't have anything coming in as regular business income. A lot of their money comes through from that Schedule E, where you're going to find passive activities. And one of the things about passive activities, although sometimes it may not be so passive that we think,
right?
Especially when I have to like rehab or fix up my units, but passive income is not subject to Social Security or Medicare tax the same way that if you earn a living. And there's so many creative things you can do with passive income that you're not able to do if you're just a regular W-2 employee. If you're a W-2 employee, the only thing you really can do is retirement accounts, HSAs, and have more babies. That's about it if you're just a W-2. But you come over on the passive side, the real estate investing side, and there's a host of things you can do to offset your tax liability. It's awesome.
Like what? Give me a couple of those examples besides depreciation, which obviously we know a lot about.
Well, just any sort of expense in general that you have to incur, right? If I have to repair or do an improvement or just have an expense, I'm getting a tax deduction for that expense when I come out of pocket for. So I'm actually saving money in the form of what's called a tax deduction. Now, deductions aren't free. We still come out of pocket for them. So just an example, if I have a 30% tax rate and I have to spend $1,000 on an expense, well, it really only costed me $700 because I was able to write that expense off through my real estate, through my business. And again, on that real estate side of things, there's a ton of creative things that you can do that we may not get in this episode, but just know that once you become a business owner or own real estate, is a host of exclusions that you can use to your advantage that normal wage earners can't.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What about, this is a topic I've seen come up a lot, and it may be like a big red flag, but see people using different type of corporations or entities in order to invest in real estate. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
So corporations or S-corps or C-corps is a no-go. You definitely don't want to have those sort of entities own real estate because as we know, real estate appreciates in value. And anytime you hold an appreciating asset inside of a C-corp or an S-corp, there's going to be adverse tax consequences to doing so. Real estate should really primarily be held three different ways. It should be held in your personal name if you wanted to, mm-hmm. a single member LLC or a partnership LLC. That's the only way real estate should be held. You should never want to hold real estate in any sort of corporation or C-corp, S-corp, because the very adverse tax consequences that we may or may not get into today's show. Just know if you take anything away from it, just don't hold real estate in C-corps or S-corps. There you go.
Yeah, never. You know, you see this come up in forums and in, you know, BiggerPockets and Facebook groups and stuff like that.
Yeah.
People ask these questions. And it's just like, who's giving people advice to do that in the first place? That's my question.
I could name drop a big firm, but I'm not going to. I'm definitely not going to.
I don't need to hear the actual name, but tell me a little bit about your background. I mean, obviously you started out working for an accounting firm, right, out of college or in college. And then I know you went and worked for Deloitte, which one of the big four, the big accounting firms, and then recently went off on your own and started your own firm. So tell me a little bit about that progression and what made you or led you to go through those steps.
Yeah, I had that accounting and finance background. And when I was in college, it was all about, I want to work at the best company in the world. And that's how I started getting into Deloitte. I had actually applied to Deloitte 27 times before I got an interview. And it was on that 27th time I applied is when I actually got called in for an interview. And I had wanted to work there because they're the best in the business and the best accounting firm. That's where I was going to learn and grow. And when I originally applied, they had an ad that said, Deloitte is a place where leaders thrive. And coming from a leadership background, sports background, that's where I wanted to end up at. So I spent about two years there. I did investment management, tax consulting. So it worked for large investment banks, real estate syndications. But I was helping people who are already super, super rich and wealthy. I was helping billionaires, millionaires, billionaires, you know, escape taxes and whatnot. And I had kind of shifted my focus to, hey, I want to help somebody who is still working on that path. I want to help be that North Star for somebody who's a little, you know, smaller, and guide them in that direction and influence financial freedom and change family trees. Because if I can impact the family tree now, just to think about how many lives I could actually positively impact going forward, I got to thinking one night and I was like, that is awesome to think about. And so I had my heart set on that. It was just helping the everyday person achieve financial freedom and success.
That's awesome. And I mean, it's true. Deloitte is like one of the largest, if not the largest accounting firm in the world. And who are their clients? Typically, they're the large corporations, large, you know, individual families and things like that. They're obviously not necessarily individuals or smaller people are going to use, you know, these large big four accounting firms.
Right.
So that's who your clients are going to be. But it's incredible that you came across that and had that epiphany, so to speak, where you're able to now focus on a lot of it. I mean, would you say like your majority of your clients are that kind of young, up and coming, like people who are just starting out, like young families type person?
Yeah, I would say my average client is that in any sort of family tree, there's going to be that one person that changes it. There's going to be that one person that says, no more will we live like the way we have been before. And I would say 80, 90% of my clients are that first person in that family tree. Sure, they may make a good W-2 wage or a business income like most of my clients do, but they're the first person in that family tree to want to make that change and to say, hey, you know, my family is not going to have to worry about money, or I want to do this because X, Y, and Z. So that's primarily the people that I'm trying to impact is, I guess, that first line of defense of the family tree that they want to change it.
And you're finding they're doing that through real estate primarily.
Yeah, right. Through real estate. And it's crazy because over the last few decades, real estate's achieved the highest return out of any sort of asset class. And real estate, you know, as opposed to just investing in retirement accounts, it provides financial freedom the quickest, I think. Real estate isn't a get-rich-quick scheme, but it's a get-rich scheme. And you'll find over time as that snowball continues to compound and grow that people do achieve financial freedom, and oftentimes before they even reach 59 and a half.
Right, which is obviously much, much quicker than almost any other way. But you gotta do it full time. Right. I mean, are you finding the people are doing this full time basis, or they're just kind of investing on the side?
Most people start off investing on the side, and that's some part of the strategy too, is helping people not only from the tax perspective, but almost like a life coaching and financial perspective of, hey, when is the right time to actually make that jump? Because as a W-2, you know, normally you'll start off with maybe a two W-2 household, and then one, as they start investing in more real estate, hey, maybe one spouse can drop their W-2 and focus on real estate full time. But the big picture is you have to get that boat close enough to the dock in order for you to jump off, so to speak. And that's making that transition of, hey, well, if I drop this W-2 income, what does that mean for lending purposes? What does it mean for financing purposes, tax purposes? So many implications of dropping a W-2 to go full-fledged into real estate that you have to see, hey, am I actually slowing my time horizon down by doing this too soon, because now I'm going to have less funds available because I don't have a W-2. But on the contrary, do I need to do this? I have the funds available. I need to do this so I can focus on real estate. And for some clients, it's yes, absolutely. Let's go ahead and quit tomorrow. Right. Or you should have quit last week. For some clients, it's like, hey, you know, let's wait and see. Let's maybe one or two more properties, and then we can try to make that transition to financial freedom and going to real estate full time. And that's actually something that I'm working on right now, is putting together what I call the financial freedom calculator. And all it does is it looks at it and says, hey, if this is the cap rate or the cash on cash return that I can achieve in my investments, mm-hmm. how much equity do I need to have of my own money into real estate deals, assuming 15% down, 20% down, whatever loan to value, mm-hmm. how much of my own money do I need in these deals in order to achieve that financial freedom number? And then it backs out, okay, how long and how much do I have to invest to achieve that? And it'll tell you from day one. And you know, for some people, it's like, hey, if I have $150,000 passive income a year, I can retire and I don't have to worry about working. I'll focus on my real estate. Mm-hmm. Well, how do we get to that number? Backing out all these metrics and figuring out, hey, here's your financing options. And some people will start using conventional in their name, but then they'll have to upgrade to maybe debt service loans or portfolio loans. I'm working on this calculator right now.
That's great. That's awesome. That sounds exciting, because it will help kind of shape and create, you know, very individualized or, you know, specific game plans for individuals. And I think that's what a lot of people are focusing on. People don't really believe. I mean, I talk to people every day who don't believe that it's even possible. like we're in the context of cost segregation, right? They're like, wait a second, I can have all these tax deductions and then not pay any taxes. And then I can use that money to reinvest and buy a whole other property and stuff like that. Let's transition a little bit to talk about short-term rentals, because this is something that's become very popular recently over the past few years, and more so in the past year or so that I've seen, partially due to, you know, a lot of incredible people out there promoting it, but also it's just become a great asset class. I know you deal with this asset class a lot. I know there are a lot of people that are buying short-term rentals as vacation rentals, Airbnbs, et cetera, and using the tax benefits that come along with it to accelerate this path that you're talking about.
Yeah. And from a financing perspective, short-term rentals are kind of easy to get your hands on. You 10% down loans in your own debt to income. You could do debt service coverage ratio loans. So you can get into a short-term rental for 10 to 15% down, as opposed to a regular conventional long-term rental, you're looking at 20, maybe 25%. Along with that is short-term rentals, they produce more cash flow than your long-term rental. Then that's just the obvious. They produce more cash flow. But another thing that kind of resonates with me is, with if you own short-term rentals, you have guests, not tenants. And so you're not kind of looked at as like a maybe like a big bad landlord. You're more like a host at that point. So a lot of people shift to short-term rentals for that aspect, but mostly it's the cash flow and it's the financing. But then let's talk about the tax benefits, right? Because for most people who make a good wage, they're not able to take long-term rental losses against their W-2 income. So if I'm a CPA and you know, I'm making 200 grand a year and I have multifamily, I'm not able to take those passive losses against my W-2 income. They kind of get stuck and suspended, and sure, they can offset my income in future years, which is awesome, but they're not generating me tax savings today. They're generating me tax savings down the road, and I want tax savings today. And one of those ways to do it is through short-term rentals, where there's a little section within that rule that prevents long-term rental losses from going against active or W-2 income. There's an exception for if the average period of customer use is 7 days or less, which most Airbnb and VRBO type properties are. And that exception is what allows you, combined with material participation tests, of course, to take the loss from the short-term rental that's generated through cost segregation, because most short-term rentals aren't going to show a loss. Although some did in 2020 because they were forced to be shut down. Anyway, it allows you to take the loss against your W-2 or active or any other non-passive income. I've had clients even take it against like stock income, portfolio income. It doesn't have to be just W-2 or business income.
Right. Or even capital gains as well, right? Meaning,
yeah, right.
Someone gets hit with a big capital gain bill. I just had someone today where like a guy told me he's a part of a tech company that just got acquired and he's going to be forced to sell all of his shares when that acquisition happens. And, you know, when it finally like is finalized, and he's going to get hit with a huge capital gain bill because of that. So he's trying to figure out a strategy to offset that. So I'm like, hey, this is definitely one of the ways.
I had somebody kind of similar where they had bought a personal residence and it appreciated 600-700 grand. They didn't meet the 2-year use requirement. And that was the same strategy that I proposed to them. I said, hey, if we calculate what your capital gains tax bill is going to be, and we took that and bought a short-term rental with it, it's going to offset your tax bill. So at the end of the day, you don't have to pay the tax bill and you have a short-term rental, or you pay the tax bill.
Right.
Which one do you want? But to go back to it, what it allows people to do is those high earners is scale their rental portfolio, generate tax deductions today. And the numbers that we're seeing on 10% down short-term rentals where $500,000-$600,000 purchase price, they're generating 70 to 80% of their down
cash
payment.
On cash. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yes.
It's almost hard to believe. I mean, like I spoke to someone who's been investing in real estate for a long time, you know, kind of a mentor of mine. And he's like, yeah, I've had businesses, I've had properties, I've had stuff that have done very well. But when you're talking about like 50, 60, 70% cash on cash returns, he's like, it sounds too good to be true. Right. He's like, so what's the catch? Right. What's the catch?
Yeah. Well, the catch is the depreciation recapture, right? That's like the elephant in the room, I guess, if you were to metaphorically. I want to touch on one point before we got into that.
Yeah, sure.
The long-term rental losses for most people are going to be suspended, but mm-hmm. the short-term rental losses we're taking right now, which is generating those tax savings, which again, that's going to scale your financial freedom quicker, because hey, instead of that money going towards Uncle Sam or getting suspended and pushed forward, we're actually able to take those dollars and reinvest them today. And time value of money says, hey, I'd much rather have those dollars earning and working for me now, knowing that, hey, I'll have to pay the tax somewhere later down the road. I'd rather pay the tax with the tax per se, rather than just pay the tax. Pay the tax with the tax savings. There you go.
There you go. Pay the tax with the tax saving. Correct. Right.
And that's what depreciation recapture is all about, right? Is the depreciation recapture is you're accelerating your depreciation, which is lowering your cost, your adjusted basis in the asset, which means when you sell, you're going to be on the hook for a larger portion of depreciation recapture tax. So that's why if you're thinking about selling in the near future, the cost segregation may not be on the top of your list to do because you're just going to have to pay it right back.
Right.
But if this is an asset that I plan on holding for 8, 9, 10 years at least, or maybe I'm going to pass it down to my kids, whatever, it's definitely something you're going to want to do because, hey, those tax savings, whatever I got from accelerating the depreciation today, I can take and invest that. And now I have more money to pay whatever tax bill I have at year 8, 9, and 10. So it's a combination of accounting, tax, but more so finance and understanding time value of money.
Yeah, but it's really what it is. It's planning, mm-hmm. right? Which not a lot of accountants do.
Right.
I mean, I have people telling me all the time that they have an accountant that just doesn't get it. And they didn't tell them anything about this. And they've been paying taxes for years. And when you have someone who's proactive and can actually, I mean, you talk about like a financial advisor of sorts, counselor, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But it's really just allowing people to see the options that are in front of them and giving those extra opportunities or options really to make.
Right. And it's not always an absolute, you must do it.
Of course not.
You know, if somebody's in a 12, 22% tax bracket, you know, it's like something like, hey, your tax savings here aren't too much for the hassle. Maybe it's something we could think about once you get to that point, maybe the next year or the year after when you're now that short-term rentals income's hitting on top of your W-2, you're going to be in a higher tax bracket. So maybe let's do it down the road. It's not a 100% let's do it all the time, but that's where that planning comes in to actually, and you have to sit down with somebody and actually spill out your facts and circumstances because everybody's situation is different. Everybody's situation.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. And that gets overlooked so much, right? Like people putting these blanket statements out there on the internet saying, you should do this, or you should do this, or should I do this? And everyone's giving answers.
It's so scary.
It's like, you can't give answers. No one knows, right?
Yeah.
I've almost stopped like replying on Bigger Pockets because of that. It's just so many people have these questions and it would really take, you know, first of all, you can never get the facts and circumstances. Otherwise it would take like, you know, like a half an hour to like write out a proper answer.
It takes me about, yeah. I mean, it takes me, you know, a good half hour to...
Yeah.
To analyze that, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So better to have the one-on-one conversations and, you know, and see what everyone's situation is and see how you can help. Ryan, I want to, you know, this time flies over here, but I want to transition to something we call now the final four. And these are four questions I ask all my guests. The first question for you is, what's the worst job that you ever had?
The worst job I ever had was actually the first legal job that I had. So before this, I was like umpiring baseball, but it was before I was even 16. The worst job I had though was I was pushing carts at Meijer, the grocery store, for I think back then it was like $7.25 an hour. And they made us, I specifically remember like on Super Bowl Sunday of 10 years ago, having to push carts out of the snow because we had this huge snowstorm in my area. It was awful, painful, so cold. Worst job I've ever had.
Definitely. Wow, it doesn't sound so good. Okay, second question. What's a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
That one would have to be Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and specifically habit number 2, begin with the end in mind. Mm-hmm. I latch onto that one all the time because if you're able to kind of come up with a finish line or a destination, what that picture looks like and work back to get to that achievement. And that's really just begin anything with the end in mind. Like, what's the outcome? What's the goal here?
Absolutely. I actually just picked up a new version of that book and just started just recently rereading it again. And it has the version that I got was an updated like 30 year anniversary edition where his son put in like end notes to every chapter and like giving real life examples and things like that from. He's basically the one who has taken over, you know, the philosophy of his father and the late Stephen Covey and really is giving real life examples of like all of these things that they've experienced and shown through the work. It's fascinating. I mean, the book itself is a classic And if you haven't read it yet, we're going to put that in the show notes. But that updated version is just gives so many really insightful examples to just help digest it.
I got that one from Goodwill for like 50 cents.
Yeah.
Best purchase I've ever made.
Exactly. The first one I had also, I got the same idea, the same one. Awesome. Thank you for that. This definitely awesome book. Highly recommended. Third question, what's a skill or talent that you'd like to learn?
I wish I was more hands-on, more handy, so I could do more of my own repairs rather than having to hire it out. But then just knowing kind of what goes into a project or a task, I wish I was just more handy than I am, admittedly.
Getting your hands dirty.
Yeah.
Doing some renovation work, something like that. Just fix it.
Right. I was always fixing cars, but never like houses when I was younger. So I have know how to fix cars. I just don't know how to fix everything in a house. So,
all right.
Comes back to bite you when you're a landlord.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a skill that can be learned, you know, little by little, One thing at a time. There's so many awesome YouTube videos out there and stuff that just go through stuff. Bigger Pockets has a great series that they just literally go through. Other people go through examples of like every tiny little thing you need to know. Definitely something can be picked up. So fourth and final question for you, Ryan, what does success mean to you?
I think everybody has a different definition of success. Like if you look at the dictionary, it's probably 50 different definitions. But I think success to me means that I think my life would be successful knowing that nobody in my family tree has to worry about money. But then also everybody in my family tree can focus on their passion and their why and what they were put on this earth to do. And to go further, when you pass away, they don't take like a screenshot of your tombstone and check your bank account, right? Like people remember what you did and what you said and how you made other people feel, right? And that's what Maya Angelou said is they'll forget the things you did or said, but they'll never forget the way that you made them feel. And that's the type of vibe that I want to leave people and resonate with that, hey, nobody in my family tree or the people that I come across are going to have to worry about money, but then also to motivate and inspire people to live their life to what they were put on this earth to do. What are they the best at on this earth and have them focus on that task?
That's awesome. Very, very right on. Love that definition. And you're right. It means something to everyone different, but I love that definition. And it just reminded me, I saw something yesterday that said that, you know, some guy was doing like a video about tax savings. Really interesting, by the way. And I'll try to remember the guy's name afterwards, but he said at the end, he's like, death is 100% tax. Right? He's like, you can't take anything with you. Right? So
yeah, that's true.
You're going to be taxed 100% of everything. So it's like, why focus on just money, right? When all these type of things, so you got to focus on what you're passionate about, focus on life and living life. So I love that. Ryan, where can our listeners find you or reach out to you?
Instagram and Twitter at Learn Like a CPA. I also have a TikTok now, but I only have two videos on there. So it's Instagram, Twitter at Learn Like a CPA. We have a Facebook group, Tax Strategies for Real Estate Investors, that's got over 2,000 members in it. I do have other podcasts that I'm featured on that you can find in my Instagram handle, as well as my email. We could drop in the show notes below.
Awesome. We certainly will. And we'll do that. Thank you so much for joining me.
This is awesome.
It blew by so fast. Well, we definitely talked about some really awesome tips that I'm sure that everyone listening to this learned something new today.
Awesome.
Well, thank you again.
And that's what I'm here for.
Well, we'll have to have you back, and I'd love to have you enlighten us. Maybe the Wednesday night meetup also, we can enlighten the audience and some great tax tips.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because there's so many out there.
Awesome.
Well, thank you again. And thanks to our listeners for joining us. And remember, until next time, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.